And it is that time of the week, time for Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you, as always, breaking down the Nashville Predators for the next hour here on the show. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Mixed bag this weekend, kind of. Good win against the Blackhawks. You took care of business in that game. You went 4-3. It was ugly last night at Bridgestone Arena against the St. Louis Blues. You give up 7 goals in the second period, and the Predators fall 8-3 to the red-hot St. Louis Blues. And to help me talk a little bit more about that and where the Predators go from here, we welcome in Sean Smith from On the Forecheck and the Renegades of Puck as well. Sean, what's going on? How are we doing?
Oh, man, Robbie, I tell you what, just coming off of a big weekend of hockey, if you know what I mean.
There's no question about that, and it's not going anywhere. Got the Calgary Flames coming in tomorrow, Tampa Bay Lightning on Saturday, Minnesota Sunday, Calgary again, Colorado, Arizona. That's how the Predators close out the season. So not getting a whole lot easier for the Predators. Let's just start with this weekend. What did you make of the weekend as a whole, and how did things get maybe too far away from the Predators in the second period yesterday, do you think?
Well, you know, the second period, if you take that out of the equation, it wasn't a bad weekend, right? So, you know, you want to look at it kind of under a microscope and figure out exactly what went wrong. And to me, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of overreaction out there because it was such a bad period of hockey. But realistically speaking, you know, there's some big picture issues that I'd say you probably saw not just in the second period, but kind of over the past few games. You know, talking about identity play specifically, that's something we hear Coach Hines talk about all the time, is whether or not the team's playing to their identity. You know, it's not just fights. It's not just the physicality, but it's forcing your opponent to earn every inch of ice that they get and they gain. And that really wasn't happening quite a bit over the past few games. So I think really, you know, you're looking at those big picture things. You know, you need to finish checks, you need aggressive forechecking, clogging up the neutral zone, standing guys up at the blue line. And those are just things you aren't seeing as much over the past few games. And it really kind of came to a head during that second period.
It really did. And, you know, a franchise record, you give up 7 goals in the period, obviously, you know, some uncharacteristic things happening. And it's a combination of those things, uncharacteristic things happening. And St. Louis is just on a different level right now. They've scored 4 goals or more in 12 consecutive games. So they just absolutely lit the Predators up in the second period. What did you make of the decision to go back-to-back with UC Saros? Obviously, that generated a lot of attention at the time, has generated a lot of attention among Predators fans since the game has ended as well, since we know what happened in the game. What did you think of John Hines and his decision to start UC Saros in back-to-back games over the weekend?
Well, you know, I think the common thought, just typical hockey logic, says you don't start a goalie back to back. We've seen it happen before, and you've seen it happen with some success. If it were up to me, and it's clearly not, trust me, I do not get to make those decisions, but I probably would have played Riddick against Chicago and let Saros take St. Louis. You know, I don't know. People are asking if he's overworked. You think he's overworked? Is he playing too much? You know, he's a young goalie. I don't know. I remember when I was that age, and I don't remember being worn out quite often. I remember having a lot of energy every day. You know, I think maybe that if you're going to overwork a goalie or play a goalie in back-to-backs, now's the right time to do it, honestly, at this age. But I guess the thing for me, and I'm not sure where you stand on this, but either you have to trust your backup to go in and win games for you, especially a game like the one on Saturday against Chicago, or realistically, you need to be able to trust your guys to defend in front of them. And if you can't do either one of those, you know, that's more of a personnel issue than it is really a coaching issue. Because, you know, what does that say about the guys if you can't trust them to go in and defend in front of your backup, or you can't trust your backup to win games for you?
Well, and to that point, I mean, I thought the Predators, you know, let's take a look at the second goal yesterday. I mean, Tarasenko, he's a great player, obviously. He just got named the first star of the week in the NHL. But he just blows right past Alex Carrier yesterday on that second goal of the game. It's, you know, maybe a couple of centimeters away from being a 2-2 game with Yossi on the doorstep. And all of a sudden the puck goes the other way and it's an odd man rush. And instead of it being tied up at 2, it's 3-1 because of you know, just a great save by Bennington on one end, and you can't make a save on the other end in the same situation. I mean, that's how close it was to maybe being a 2-2 game yesterday, and instead it's 3-1. The Blues are off and running, and after that, I mean, it was just kind of a free-for-all in the offensive zone. The Predators had an incredible amount of breakdowns. They looked slow throughout the second period, and that's going to happen from time to time. But to your point, it got to a point in the second period yesterday where I don't really care who was in net. Those pucks were going in.
Yeah, I think someone, maybe it was Terry Crisp, referred to it as a Blues goal parade or something like that. But I think a better way to phrase it would have been, it was starting to turn into a Jazz funeral. And that it was literally a parade of just march down the ice, throw the puck at the net, it's going in, almost like they were on a different level or something, or they found some kind of, you know, secret spot they could put the puck and it would go in every time. But at that point, there was no stopping them. They were on fire. It was something to see for real.
So it's been an inconsistent run here for the Predators, really largely since the All-Star break, if you want to go big picture with it, but certainly here lately with the way that they've been playing. I mean, they'll come out, they'll look really good. You know, I thought they looked great against San Jose. You only end up winning the game 1-0 in overtime, but there have been games where I thought the Pittsburgh game, they looked really good. They lost in overtime of that game. And then you'll have your games like last night, or really, Edmonton, I thought they got thumped from start to finish in that game as well. And it's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride for the Predators lately. Why do you think that's been the case? Why do you think that they've been able to be, or not been able to find that consistency in their game really since the All-Star break, but especially over the stretch of the last 3 or 4 weeks here?
You know, I've seen a lot of people trying to blame it on line shuffling. And I've had to really sit and think about that long and hard, because that seems like kind of the go-to answer as well. If you see the coaches juggling lines, they're trying to fix something that's going wrong. But at the same time, if you see, you know, players being shifted around, then maybe they're trying to find something that works better. But what it comes down to for me is that inconsistency. It's not so much this shuffle of lines as much as there's those key elements of their game that are just kind of getting overlooked. It's almost like I mentioned all the big details, but there's some really small ones in there too. Something I've noticed, especially over the past 3 or 4 games, is the passing on the team has really gotten sloppy. And I don't mean, you know, it looks terrible, but you're looking at slower passes. You're looking at passes that are just a little bit off the mark. And when you're playing against teams with speed, you know, you mentioned the Edmonton game where they got thumped. You know, what was happening was you saw them picking off a lot of passes, and then the Predators couldn't catch anybody on that team. It was off to the races. And you can't forecheck if you can't get down in the zone. You can't stop guys through the neutral zone if they're already through it. You can't stand up guys at the blue line if they're already over it. And that becomes a problem where that tiny minor detail ends up kind of exposing this larger flaw of, we can play this game if we can get into that zone and clog it up. We can play this game if we can make these crisp passes. And it seems silly that such a minor detail turns into such a big problem. But I think it's been, you know, at first, if you're really paying attention, you see it. But I think that it would be hard to miss it, especially yesterday, and especially against Edmonton. It passing looked off.
Well, I agree with all of that. And, you know, factor kind of with that now, Sean, is you look at offensively what's going on. You know, I think Forsberg, for the most part, is still playing well, and he's generating chances. And, I mean, he's still racking up some assists, but this is now 8 games where Philip Forsberg doesn't have a goal. Obviously, I think for the most part, Roman Josi's still playing well. I thought he was unbelievable last week in that game against San Jose. But he's got 1 point in his last 6 games. And as good as those two guys have been all season long, I think part of what you're seeing now also is when it dries up a little bit offensively from those two, it's difficult for the rest of the lineup to maybe overcompensate from that. Like, I still think those two are playing well. I think Duchesne's still playing well. I think Johansson's playing well. But when those two guys aren't scoring at the clip that they were earlier this year, it's difficult for this team to overcome. And obviously, it's not a great time, timing-wise, right now for those two to be going through a slump.
No, you never want to see your players that kind of lead the offensive charge start to slump toward the end of the season. Now, I would say if you were looking at a situation where the Predators had their spot secure for the playoffs, it'd be totally different. But you're kind of at the make it or break it, do or die time of the season. And you're seeing guys like Forsberg fall off on the scoring side. Like you said, he's still playing a really strong game. And I've always felt like you can kind of see him take charge of a game and say, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm going to go make this happen, get the puck, take it down the ice, put it in. You're seeing him do all of those things without finishing. You're seeing Yossi doing all of those things without finishing. And you look back to last season when people complained about Matt Duchene and, you know, he wasn't producing. The problem was it was just like we're talking about now with Forsberg and Yossi. He's doing all of the right things, but when it came time to actually finish, the pucks weren't going through. And that's not the wall you want to hit at this stage in the game. Unfortunately, that seems to be the wall they've hit. And the real question is going to be, you got two options here. You can either have those guys break through, start things moving again, or you're going to have to really see the rest of the team step up and start contributing on the score sheet. You look back at who scored the goals yesterday, and you see, you know, you're looking at depth scoring. You've got to have more than that. It can't all come from the top. It's got to come from all over the place, especially in the absence of the top lines or your top pairing defender producing.
We're off and running here today on Preds Insiders, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators. Look ahead to a daunting schedule coming up for the rest of this week for Nashville, and get Sean's thoughts as well on what the lineup should look like for the Predators as they move forward here. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And now an outlet pass and another goal. Braden Schenn with 3:33 to play in the second scores another goal for St. Louis. That's his second of the night, and it's 7-1.
Man, another one, another attempt to get through the neutral zone.
Classic example last night of sometimes when it rains, it pours for the Nashville Predators. They give up 7 in the second period. They fall 8-3 to the St. Louis Blues. They'll try to rebound, taking on the red-hot Calgary Flames tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. Robbie Stanley alongside Sean Smith from On the Forecheck, taking your thoughts as well on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, Sean, we'll get to the schedule part of this here in just a second, because it is brutal coming up for the Predators. But I'm just interested from your vantage point right now. It feels like to me that John Hines is kind of searching for it a little bit in terms of the lineup. Obviously, they put Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchene together a couple of weeks ago, and it started off great. It started to fade a little bit, 5-on-5. And I think in a perfect world heading into the playoffs, you'd love for your guys to be spread out a little bit where they're not all on one line and, you know, a team can really just focus in on that. So I like splitting them up in theory, but also the production has got to follow along with that. And whether it's been Tolvanen or Tomasino or really whoever in that top six outside of the four guys we've talked about that produce, it's been kind of tough this year in the top six. And they've tried a bunch of different things. As of late, Cody Glass is back up. They put Tolvanen and Tomasino with him. They've moved Janot around a little bit. They've done a lot of things with the lineup the last few weeks. What do you make of the lineup shuffling that's taken place to this point? And as they head into this game against Calgary tomorrow, what do you think the lineup should look like in terms of the combinations that they throw out there?
Yeah, that's a big question. It's a $1 million question, really more than $1 million. There's a lot of money on these lines. So here's what I would say. And I'm going to start by talking about Mikael Granlund, because Mikael Granlund is someone that I don't think I could praise enough. And I'm going to say, you know, he can very easily get overlooked because he's not scoring a lot of goals, but his assists number is just climbing constantly. And it seems like no matter where you put him, he's going to get the job done. Now, I like the magic that you saw with Johansson back with Forsberg and Duchene, but I really want to see Forsberg, Duchene, Granlund again. One of the reasons is because I think Granlund makes magic happen with Forsberg and Duchene, and I think those two do very well with each other anyway. I think that's almost a perfect line, in my opinion, moving forward. I want to see the Hurd line reunited. I know there's been a little bit of movement with that. And I'm really enjoying this Tolvanen and Tomasino glass line. I think it's something that I've been clamoring for a while. I wanted to see Cody Glass come back from Milwaukee, and I wanted to see him kind of thrive in that role. I think you've got a lot of youth on that line, and I think they can do a lot of good things given time. Now, do you really want to spend your last six games of the season trying it out to see if it works? It might not be the best thing if you're trying to make sure that you get into the playoffs, but if you get into the playoffs and they're kind of cooking, then that might be a really good thing to have come round one, because it's a new look. It's some younger guys. They got a lot of energy. That kind of leaves a question of what to do with the other line. And what you have at this point is Ryan Johansson kind of in this awkward spot of, he's going to be the center. Do you put him with Cunningham and Cousins? And the thing I like about Johansson is he can score goals on his own, but he can also make a lot of things happen. Those guys have a pretty gritty physical game that they can play. And Johansson is a big boy, and he can throw his body around and he can make a lot of things happen. Johansson can make a lot of magic happen as the center, and I think maybe he could bring some good stuff to both Cunningham and Cousins' game. That's kind of what I would like to see. I've also heard John Hines mention that Michael McCarron is going to be coming back from injury soon, and that they would probably see him back in the lineup. I don't know what that does. I don't know if that puts him, you know, if that reshuffles up how that fourth line's been looking with Tolvin and Tomasino and Glass. But that's kind of the big question is, do you put somebody in there who's going to play a more physical, aggressive game on that fourth line than someone like Glass? Although he has added an element of physicality to his game that I've really enjoyed. You know what you're getting with McCarron. There's not a lot of question that he's going to go in and throw his body around and try to do what he can to make that happen. So really that for me is what's up in the air. If it were me moving forward, I'd want to keep the Tolvin and Glass-Tomasino line together.
And those are the decisions that John Hines has to make right now, because you want to find some combinations that work. What you also don't want to do in the last six games is continue to shuffle things around game by game when you're searching for it. Like, I feel like you're getting to the point where you're going to have to settle in and just hope that something works here. And maybe that is as simple as just putting the big line back together. Maybe it's as simple as putting them back on a permanent basis with Granlund at that point. I don't know exactly what the answer will be for the Predators as they move forward here, but they're running out of time to figure it out. So that's a spot that I don't necessarily envy John Hines being in right now. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Jimbo texting in says, it seems to me like when we played most of the year as a very physical team, then we started to get into penalty trouble. Now it looks like they're being told not to hit anyone. I think when Janot is lighting people up, the whole team plays better. Turn them loose. I don't know if I buy Sean that they're being told not to hit anyone, but certainly penalties have been a problem in different times this year. They're the most penalized team in the league. You know, I think it's separate, right? They're also, they lead the league in fighting majors as well. So you kind of separate those two things when you talk about the penalties, but it's interesting to me. I had this theory floated out to me over the weekend, and I don't know that I fully buy it, but I at least understand where the person's coming from. And the theory was, Sean, that, okay, well, the Predators play this physical, tough brand of hockey, and they played that way all year, kind of your playoff style of hockey. And it looked great in the regular season earlier when maybe teams weren't playing that way quite as much. And now that the playoffs have gotten closer and other teams are starting to play that way too, maybe that shows who the Predators really are and they're less effective. Again, I don't know that I totally buy that, because to me, the Edmonton game had nothing to do with playoff-style hockey. They just couldn't catch them at that point. So I think it's games have played out in different ways, but what do you make of that idea that maybe the Predators' style of play this time of year isn't quite as effective because other teams are starting to play that way?
I hate to be a yes man, but I agree with you. I don't really buy into that. I don't think it's less effective, and I don't necessarily think that it's an issue that other teams are playing that style, and now that means that they're not as good as we thought they were. I think what you have going on, and I don't think they're being told not to hit anybody, for sure, but it does seem like they're not being as aggressive, which you talk about the penalties. Let's think about it's a lot of penalties that are hurting them, or a little, you know, ticky-tack stick-type penalties, and not these – maybe an interference call here or there, but you're not looking at the types of penalties that you would say come from aggressive play as much as you have undisciplined play. And so I think a lot of that stuff, that stick penalty stuff, goes away when you hit the playoffs. I think they loosen up a little bit. You know, there didn't seem like, were there a ton of penalties yesterday? I don't recall there being a ton of penalties. No. And that's not what the downfall of the game was a penalty situation. So no, I don't really think they're less effective. I just think that it's almost like they've eased up a little bit on the aggression for whatever reason. I don't think it means they're not hitting. I just think it means that, like you said, with Edmonton, they can't catch them. They haven't been able to catch them in several years. You know, that's a fast team. And this is a style of play that if you can catch them, you can hit them and you can slow them down. But you can't hit what you can't catch.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. Got a texter that says, would Poile letting Forsberg walk for nothing be enough to end his tenure here? What would it take to convey to the ownership group that we are tired of mediocrity and want to commit to a long-term plan to build a championship-winning team? Look, I don't know how this is going to play out with Philip Forsberg. I'm raising my eyebrows that it's not done yet. I thought it would be a couple weeks after the deadline when it got done, and it is, I guess, somewhat concerning that it's not done yet. I will say this. If the Predators lose Philip Forsberg for nothing, Predators fans are going to be very, very mad. If it's a combination of losing Forsberg for nothing and the Predators missing the playoffs, and that happens together, it's going to be interesting around here. I don't think there's any question about that.
I think interesting is the right word to use there. You saw, as upset as fans were, I think, when they quote unquote let Craig Smith go for nothing. Imagine that with Forsberg. It's going to be multiplied times about, I don't know, 1,000. Yeah. You know, Craig Smith, great Predator, one of my favorite players of all time, mainly because of the last name. But, you know, at the same time, people were upset. They were probably right to be upset. He probably could have brought something if what was going to happen was a first round exit, and it wasn't worth it to lose him for nothing. Now you want to put Philip Forsberg's name out there in that same situation. I'm not going to say that fans would riot, but I'm going to say that there's going to be a lot of upset people who aren't going to be very quiet about it.
Sean Smith on with us here from On the Forecheck. So Sean, as we kind of wrap up here, the schedule for the Predators is pretty unbelievable coming down the stretch here. We talked about it a little bit earlier. You've got Calgary tomorrow, the two-time defending cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning on Saturday, the Minnesota Wild, who have been as hot as anybody, on Sunday. Calgary again, Colorado, the best team in the league right now, and then Arizona to close out the season. So five of those six games, with the obvious exception of Arizona, are not only against playoff teams, but against elite-level playoff teams as well. What do you make of the schedule, and what do you make of the Predators' playoff chances coming down the stretch? MoneyPuck.com has them at 85% heading into play today, which I hear it. I think the Predators are going to make it, but 85% to me seems a little high.
I think they're going to make it too. I don't want to like oversell the idea that the sky is falling here, because, you know, I don't think it is. I think there's a lot of things that would have to – I mean, the Predators would have to go on a pretty impressive losing streak. Vegas would have to go on a pretty impressive winning streak. I think when it comes down to it, they're going to be able to pull off the wins they need to pull off. It is a tough schedule, but we have seen this team perform well against those elite teams over the course of the season. So I feel like they're going to be able to pull it together, make some things happen. And I almost want to say that it's not going to come down to the last minute. Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later that they clinch their spot.
Be nice to see, if you're a Predators fan, the New Jersey Devils pull off an upset tonight as they take on the Vegas Golden Knights. Anytime Vegas loses is good news for the Predators at this point. Sean Smith from ontheforecheck.com, the Renegades of Puck as well, our guest here on Preds Insider. Sean, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to join us tonight.
Anytime you need me, Robbie, I'll be ready to go.
Absolutely. Sean Smith does great work for On the Forecheck. Check him out at ontheforecheck.com. Coming up next, we'll get to a conversation we had this morning with Darren McFarland about the weekend that was and what it sets up for the Predators as they close out on that brutal schedule we just mentioned. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you, and we caught up with Darren McFarland earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road to get his thoughts on the Predators as they enter into a brutal part of the schedule starting tomorrow against the Calgary Flames. Here was that conversation from earlier today with Darren McFarland. we're happy to have you here, Darren. And yes, it was quite something last night in that second period. They allow 7 goals against the Blues. Obviously, that is a franchise record for goals allowed in a single period. What did you think of the weekend as a whole for the Predators? And now as they take on Calgary tomorrow with the next 5-game stretch here against teams that are not only playoff teams, but really, really good teams as well. What do you make of the spot that they sit in here, 4 points up on Vegas?
I mean, it's playing out exactly like we've been sitting here talking every Monday for weeks, right? I mean, it's going to play out to the bitter end, although I still think they're going to get in. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, Vegas is currently 4 points back of them. Vegas is 3 points back of L.A. for that third spot. Vegas did lose over the weekend. L.A. beat Columbus on Saturday night. You know, they haven't been playing particularly well. They were okay against Chicago, a Chicago team that's not very good, and they won. And that's really all that matters at this time of year. You get the 2 points. But I think my concern is just even in the games they've looked good, I don't know if you guys agree or not, I thought they were the much better team against San Jose. And they won 1-0 in overtime, and I thought they were the much better team. I thought they were the better team in Pittsburgh, and they lost in overtime to the Penguins. I think that's probably the concern for me. Yes, the 2 games last night in Edmonton, it fell apart last night. Everything looked and felt good after 1 period, even though it was tied at 1. I thought the Predators were the better team. I thought they should have been up at that point. And then Tarasenko, boy. Did anybody have a flashback of Ryan Ellis in the playoffs against Dallas? I think it was Dallas on that play.
Holy smokes.
I mean, it was like Carrier is draped all over him, and Tarasenko just kind of shoot him away and scored. And really, St. Louis was off and running after that, and that was the most goals the Blues have ever scored in 1 period of play in their entire existence. And, of course, the Predators, it was the most goals they've ever given up in their entire existence in 1 period of play. 6 was their previous high. St. Louis's previous high of scoring goals in a period was 6. So both records were broken on both sides. But I think that's the concern level. They weren't good. They obviously, the compete level was not there in the Edmonton game. They played 2 very good power play units. Edmonton was the 4th best power play unit in the league on Thursday. They scored 2 power play goals and even had a shorty as well. And St. Louis came in as the 2nd best power play unit in the league. And that power play goal at the end of the first period, they scored it in 6 seconds. So I think just right now the concern is just – I don't know what's going on. I still think they're built for success, but right now the same compete level doesn't look there. And even when they look good, even if they get the result, I don't know. You're sitting there going, huh, how should I feel about this? And look, in the end, 2 points is 2 points, but I really thought they should have, things should have been a lot easier against the Sharks. I thought things should have been easier on Saturday. I don't know how you guys feel about that. That's probably just my quick thoughts to the question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're playing well overall, and I agree. I mean, the San Jose game, sometimes you have those games, right, where you really dominate territorially and you just don't finish. But at the same time, gosh, it seems like it just seems like they – for the most part are struggling to manufacture enough 5-on-5. And then of course you have all the mistakes yesterday, but then St. Louis, like you said, Darren, they got rolling and they are, that's a really interesting team to me with what they have with those 3 lines and the way they got so many different forwards going right now.
Joe, just say this real quick before you ask the question. I'm raising my hand. I totally misjudged this team. This team is way better than I thought. Coming into the season, I was like the Blues. I was like, yeah, they're okay. They'll be hanging around, They'll be hanging around and stuff. They're way better than I thought they were going to be coming into the season. So I was dead wrong about St. Louis. That team is damn good.
And with 2 goalies playing well too.
Yep.
But do you think with the Preds, I mean, are they running out of gas overall? Do you think that's part of this? And is that even something? Now you got with this schedule ahead, if that is true, I think there may be some doubt about whether they make the playoffs.
Well, look, it's a fair question. I understand it. I mean, I know that was getting brought up last night. Look, I know in an 8-3 loss, people are going to question why you would go back to UC Soros in a back-to-back situation. But I keep going back to, I'm not going to play couch coach or coach afterwards, because it's easy to react once it's all said and done. Once you've seen the finished product, we can all question everything. I mean, life would be so much easier if we knew what was coming first, and then we could react to what was coming first. I mean, right? How smart would we all be? I mean, that's the way John Hines has operated. I understand we've been trained in this market, and we've been kind of trained, really, over the years, that in a back-to-back situation, it was Barry Trotz, standard operating procedures. The starting goalie is going to play one game. The backup is going to play the other. Even Peter Laviolette, standard operating procedures in a back-to-back situation. Starter will play one, the backup another. That hasn't been John Hines, and it's not just this season. Since he's been here, this is what he's done. So I wasn't surprised at all that UC Soros was back in there after the game Saturday morning against Chicago. I just wasn't. Because he's proven over and over again he's willing to go right back to UC Soros in those back-to-backs. You know, should he have played? Should he not have played? David Rittich came in. I understand that's a tough spot. But, you know, goalies come in tough spots and shut things down. And then goalies come in tough spots and they don't look very good. And David Rittich didn't look very good in a tough spot. Just overall, I think the team didn't look very good. So I know everybody – and now the John Hines – crowd is coming back out. You know, I've already started getting those tweets and feedback. John Hines, you know, it's been very quiet on that front for a while, but you lose 8-3 down the stretch of a regular season, so the gloves are off. I understand the fans are pissed, and I get it, and now they're going to start blaming everybody, and this is what happened. Now it's going to be up to the Predators again, as you guys mentioned, another tough one coming up tomorrow night against Calgary. They've still got an opportunity to finish this five-game homestand on a positive note and finish 3-2 above 500. And that's ultimately what you want when you look at the schedule of that five-game homestand. If you lose it, you go 2-3, and then, boy, the doubters will really get a little bit louder.
Darren McFarland on with us here on Robbie and Rextro. So, Darren, we talked about this earlier. Forsberg hasn't scored in his last eight games. Yossi's got, I think, 1 point in his last six games. And it does kind of feel like they're searching for it a little bit right now in terms of the combinations five-on-five that work. What do you make of the lineup and the way that it is right now? Would you at all consider maybe going back to Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchesne maybe full-time the next few games?
I think I've made it abundantly clear about that. Look, they're not listening to me, and I get it. Although things did kind of play out that way. To answer your question, I would personally. And I know this is what happens in hockey. Coaches start shuffling things around, and the deck has certainly been shuffled here in the last couple of games. There's no doubt about that. But I've made it abundantly clear. I would move up Tomasino. I would move up Janot. Look, John Hines is not good. For whatever reason, man, it is just – he just freaks out. It's kind of like the way we used to feel about gambling, right? Or not we. I'm not going to say me. But like leagues, like gambling. Oh, no, we could never have a team in Vegas. Oh, no. Ooh, taboo. Ooh. I mean, you say third line to John Hines, split it up. He goes, I mean, he doesn't want anything to do with splitting up the third line. Even when he does it, he is very quick to go back and put the third line together. I understand that, but I just would do it. I would have Tanner Janot on the second line. He's earned that right. I would move him up. I get it. The third line's been good. Then move the damn third line up and make them the second line. I mean, give them some more ice time. I would do that. I know he will not, but that's what I've been saying. And to answer your question, Robbie, yeah, I would. I'd put them back together. But, look, the bottom line is they're going to have to start figuring out a way to start scoring goals, because this is not the time of year for that. I mean, good Lord, could you imagine if somebody does – if Duchesne or Forsberg doesn't get to 40?
Yeah.
Like, what? I mean, Tanner Janot – Forsberg, Duchesne, Yossi, it looked like all these records were going to happen, And now you're, you know, Josi getting to 100, Janot beating Forsberg's rookie season with more than 26 goals. I mean, I still believe Duchesne and Forsberg will get to 40. In fact, here's my question for you guys. Forsberg's at 39. Duchesne's at 39. They're at Arizona. It's the last game of the season. Or you don't even have to say it's the last game of the season. In this little, this final games, you're out on the ice, both of you, and you have the puck on your stick, and it's an empty net as you guys are about to win. And both of them are up in front of you. Who are you throwing to? Empty net. Duchesne on one side, Forsberg on the other. Both have 39 goals.
Forsberg's the one's about to get paid, so they're going to pass puck to him.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going Forsberg. I don't want to deal one of those butt checks in practice.
Okay. So both of you go to Forsberg. That was pretty you guys didn't really even hesitate. Okay.
Yeah, Duchesne will, you know, he'll be fine. He'll shrug it off.
Be all right. What if it was the final game against Arizona and that was going to be the final play of the regular season? One was going to finish with 40 and one wasn't. So you still
I want a final game of the regular season, empty net, a 2-on-0 with those two, and you have to decide if you're going to be that guy and just shoot it in or if you're passing it off.
That's even a better scenario right there. I like it.
Well, if they are in that scenario where they're both still going for 40, are they in the playoffs at that point in the last game of the season?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question, Joe. I would say, you know, they don't want to try that scenario out. I wouldn't feel good about it.
That was Darren McFarland on with us earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. It's certainly going to be interesting coming down the stretch, and they need the offense to return goal scoring wise, certainly from Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, and Matt Duchesne as well. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Predators in action tomorrow night, taking on the Calgary Flames. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Flames are going to play tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks, so a back-to-back for the Flames coming up. And the Flames going with Jacob Markstrom in net tonight against the Blackhawks. So that would tell me that probably Dan Vladar in net tomorrow for the Flames and not Jacob Markstrom, which is good news. Markstrom has a .923 save percentage and 9 shutouts this year for the Calgary Flames. So he has played exceptionally well for Calgary this year. He'll be going up against Chicago tonight, I would guess, based on where the Flames are in the standings, and that is at the top of the Pacific Division. You're probably not playing your goalie back-to-back games. So probably a backup goalie that the Predators are dealing with tomorrow, but a backup goalie that also has 11 wins in 19 appearances this year, 11-5-1 on the season. So they've won some games with Vladar in net as well. Taking your thoughts on the Predators on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. CeCe texting in says, why have a backup goalie if he can't get adequate net time? And it has certainly been kind of a challenging year for David Rittich. Saros has played, I believe, in 64 games to this point. David Rittich has gone at times weeks without getting into the lineup. He gets in there yesterday in relief of UC Saros, and it did not go well for David Rittich. Now, some of that was he let in probably at least one, maybe two, that are pretty shaky, and some of that was it was pretty much open season on any Predators goalie in net yesterday with the Blues. But, Ian, overall, what have you made of David Rittich and his play for the Predators, and how big of a position of need is that backup goaltender right now next year, whether that's David Rittich coming back or Connor Ingram being that guy next year? I'm interested to see what they do with that.
I mean, this offseason, I guess it was pretty, I guess looking back, they must have really thought that Saros was going to carry a pretty heavy workload, because they didn't. Yeah. I mean, they slightly addressed backup goalie, but not really. And given last year, I think even sometimes we were a little bit surprised the amount of times that Saros started. I think he even started a couple of back-to-backs down the stretch last year.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think going into the season, they were really expecting Saros to carry the workload. So for some whatever reason, they didn't feel like they needed to prioritize the backup goalie. And I don't know if that was a Saros workload thing. They knew he was so good, let's just play him a bunch. if the salary cap played into anything like that, whether or not they were trying to spend up, if they're trying to save money anywhere. So I'm not really sure. I mean, it's an interesting situation here because they still have two sets of back-to-backs.
They do, and two back-to-backs that, you know, could be really important. And look, you know, Saros has handled back-to-backs before, but the numbers, I mean, they are what they are for goalies, not just this year, but traditionally when you start your goalie two games in a row, it typically doesn't end well. Like the numbers are what they are in that scenario. I believe this year, Adam Vigna tweeted this out yesterday, goalies on 0 days rest, it's .883 save percentage. That's not going to get it done.
Like, so, you just don't see the league do that often. Any team.
No.
You know,
you really
like
don't.
Very rarely.
So, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you're talking Tampa Bay, and then you have to host Minnesota. You have to travel in between there. So chances of Saros playing both back-to-back, very slim to none. And given what we've just seen, I'm not sure that's an ideal situation. And then, yeah, heaven forbid, the last game of the season means something. And you're playing in Colorado on Thursday night, traveling to Arizona to play the following Friday night. And I mean, if it means something, it could be big save Dave in there for playoffs or bust coming off a back-to-back against Arizona. Now, yeah, I mean, Arizona's not, you know, as good as the teams that, you know, obviously is not as good as St. Louis or Minnesota. So, I mean, I suppose if you're going to play him on a back-to-back against Arizona's the team, you'd like to do that. But still, not sure that is a great feeling, you know. I don't know. Big save Dave, his Riddick, his style is way different than Saros. You know, he's a much bigger guy. He's way less, he's a little bit more flaily, I feel like, in the net there. So, I don't know if style has anything to do with it. I was a little bit surprised they played him in back-to-back. I guess we shouldn't have been, considering we've already said last year they did that and they didn't have to travel and it was more than 24 hours. But I think it'd have to pretty much give you some pause to play him on the back-to-backs against Minnesota or Arizona the rest of the season.
Well, and what I wonder too, Ian, is, you know, you look at the numbers for Riddick. He's got an .883 save percentage, .342 goals against. I mean, those are not good numbers. But he's only played in 13 games this year. Like, he's barely played this year for the Predators. And you mentioned the workload for Saros. I agree. Like, I think that was the plan the whole time. I guess my question would be for them is, like, what is the confidence level in David Riddick? Because if you don't have confidence that he could come in there and get a win, do you not, like, turn it over to Connor Ingram? Like, I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. To me, you need to have confidence in your backup goalie to be able to step in and win you some games. And I get it. Like, they're in a different situation this year. It's not Pekka, it's a backup goalie. You know, when Pekka was the starter, I think they had a lot of confidence in Saros to be that guy too. So I get it. It's not quite the same situation, but the question that I would want to know from their vantage point is, the numbers are what they are. To Riddick, to his credit, has won a couple of games for them this year that have been really big, including Florida on the road and Minnesota on the road as well. So he's come up with some big points, but I would want to know if you gave John Hines some truth serum, like, what's the confidence level like in Riddick?
And what is Riddick's confidence level at this point? You know, yep. Like, he hasn't played a lot. He was on Smashville Live a couple weeks ago with Max Herz and Hal Gill, and he was pretty much talking about how it's a difficult situation to be in all season when you don't, you know, he realizes that Saros is playing so well, but to not play, to not be able to find any type of rhythm, to not be able to find any confidence, and then you get in there and immediately they give up like a 2-on-0 chance. Yeah. Like, as soon as Riddick is in, they're giving up an odd man rush the other way. And I mean, it's just wham, bam, bam. And it's just like, okay, you threw him in there, but, you know, it wasn't really fair because he probably wasn't expecting to start. And then you throw him in there and you're just giving him rush after rush. You're setting him up to fail.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that, I mean, the play in front of the goalies in the second period yesterday was just atrocious. And you can't have that moving forward if you're the Predators. Robert in Nashville on the text line says, do you think moving Forsberg off the money line has devalued his negotiation strength? He seems like he's checked out and hasn't scored in a bit. I totally reject the notion that he's checked out. I mean, I still think he's playing pretty well for the most part, but there's no question. Like, they need him to start finishing. He's been 8 games without a goal for Forsberg. You know, he's had some really good ones during that stretch. I thought he was good against San Jose. I thought he was great against Florida, and he didn't score in that game. He's had some chances against Chicago. Like, he's getting chances, but, Ian, they just, with the way that their team is constructed, they've needed Forsberg, Duchesne, and Yossi, and Johansson to be as good as they've been all season just to get in this spot. And when two of those guys and Yossi and Forsberg are kind of drying up a little bit lately, that's not good timing on that standpoint.
It almost feels like Forsberg's trying too hard right now, trying to do too much. I mean, he's trying to exit the zone with all these like weird one-handed, one hand on the stick, trying to like make these power moves, shrug these guys off. And granted, he is super skilled, right? And we've seen him do a bunch of these flip it to himself kind of deke moves and everything like that. But I think there's almost, he's almost going too far here to a detriment where he's almost trying so hard and trying to do so many things. He's losing the puck in the neutral zone too much. He's trying to be too fancy. He's stepped it, you know, he needs to play more of a simple game. Get back to it, get back to the power forward game, and kind of crash the net, look for some things. You know, I do wonder with the style of play going against some of these teams, if they get, you know, trapped into playing the up-and-down game versus Edmonton or getting into a more of an up-and-down game versus St. Louis, and it's harder to stick to the Preds' forecheck style. So, I mean, they're going to need Forsberg to keep up his heater or get back on a heater, I think, to help carry them into the playoffs, especially if they want to do any damage in the first round.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, it was interesting to hear John Hines kind of talk about that with Willie in the pregame yesterday in terms of he's met with Forsberg, they've had conversations about his game overall, and he's still getting a lot of chances, but they need him to find the back of the net soon once again as well. Preds taking on the Calgary Flames tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Next five games, not only against playoff teams, but against elite-level powerhouse teams in the NHL as well. So if the Predators are going to make the playoffs, they're going to have their work cut out for them, and that begins tomorrow against the Calgary Flames. Ian Safar, appreciate you taking time to join us here on the program.
Oh, for sure. Thanks, Robbie.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. Got some NBA playoffs coming up on the other side. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.